When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode and the entire season is proudly brought to you by California Cryobank. Use code QUEERFAM for a free level 2 subscription at cryobank.com.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
So I remember this notification coming through. So I logged on and you were at work as well. And I said, oh my God, I think we've just found our children. I said, log on, log on. And you logged on and you said the same, right?
Yeah, it was twin boys with a Portuguese heritage. It wasn't something we were looking for. We weren't looking for twins. We weren't looking for a Portuguese heritage.
You know when it clicks, yeah, and you just think, "This is, I'm a twin. You're Portuguese. This is like a match made in heaven. This is it."
To the point that we stopped, we deactivated our profile and put all our effort into the two boys.
Yeah.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Queer Family Podcast, y'all. The show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I am your host. And you, my beautiful friends, are tuning into the show whose mission is to highlight, uplift, celebrate, and normalize our beautiful LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities, y'all. And this episode does not disappoint on that front. I had the supreme pleasure of sitting down with Eddie and Aurelio, otherwise known as Fortunate Dads on social media. They have an account that they created to basically be the representation that they didn't see on their family building journey towards getting their two boys. They went down the adoption route to create their gorgeous family. And what struck me the most about this interview with them, this conversation with them, is, you know, they went down the route that has no science, right? So there is that, you take away that unknown, the science part. And still, even with just kind of a straightforward path that has steps you have to take to get to, and, you know, hopefully at the end you do get the family that you are meant to have, it still was such a process. And that's all I'm going to say about it. But ooh, they went through some hoops to create this family of theirs. And I'm so happy they did. And I'm so happy they're being the visibility that we need to see in the world to help normalize families like ours. And they're just beautiful, doing great things. I can't wait for you to hear the interview. But now there is one thing I want to share about the interview you're about to hear. We had a little sound issue that we didn't realize was happening when we were recording. But when my magical, magical editor, Gerson, went in to edit it, there was something happening where anytime I spoke over Eddie and Aurelio, which I do it from time to time, my voice cuts out. And so he did his very best to try not to have that happen often. So what ended up happening is we did cut out a lot of me talking as much as we could, especially when I'm talking over them. So it's a little bit different this week. You won't hear me prodding them, asking the questions as much or chiming in like I do, which you actually might appreciate that. You might not want to hear me as much as you do. So if that's the case, wow, I'm winning over here. But just please, while you're listening, there it does show up here and there in this episode, this sound issue. And just, you know, listen with a grain of salt, listen with understanding and compassion. And please know that that is not my norm. I do not like to have bad sound in any of my episodes, but this conversation was so beautiful that I just wanted to share it with y'all. And it's not terrible. It's not that bad. You can make it through. I know you can. But listen with a grain of salt, please. And just know we are aware. And thank you. And Gerson is bomb, right? Send a note to Gerson telling him, Gerson, you the bomb. I know kids don't say that anymore, but I just did. So there. Before I roll that tape, I have some listener mail to read, y'all. I love it when y'all reach out, and I got one for you right here. This one came in through text on our voicemail. They texted me. There's so many ways to reach out to me. So many ways, and I'll tell you after this what they are. This listener wrote, "Hi, just wanted to send a quick text to thank you for all of your hard work making this podcast." Oh, thank you. But more particularly for making so many episodes highlighting trans parenthood journeys. I'm trans masculine and am just starting out on a journey to hopefully become a gestational parent. Ooh, sending baby dust. And I can't tell you how awesome it's been to hear from other trans people who have carried pregnancies on your podcast. There's not enough content sharing the stories of trans parents, and you're doing so much to fill the gap. Living in the Midwest, I don't see a lot of trans parents around, so it's just awesome to see those stories pop up in my podcast feed over and over. And then in all caps, thank you. No, thank you. Oh my God, I love you. Made my morning. You are making my week. Whoever you are, I don't have a name, but thank you so much for reaching out and saying that. I am trying. I am trying to be inclusive of everybody in our beautiful rainbow. Yes, I called it a rainbow. Did you hear what I did there? But I do. I want to include all of the stories. So thank you for that validation. And I'm constantly looking for more. So if you're listening right now and you're like, I should tell my story. I should totally tell my story. Yeah, you totally should. Reach out to me, email me at thequeerfamilypodcast@gmail.com, DM me, find me on the socials at The Queer Family Podcast, or you can also give me a phone call at 646-470-1840 and drop me a line there, drop me a text, whatever you want. I love hearing from you all, be you an L, be you a G, a B, a T, a Q, an A, an ally, whatever. If you have something you want to share, I want to hear it. So please reach out. Don't send me mean things though, please. I get enough of that on YouTube. Oh my God, I don't understand YouTube. Somebody, can y'all please go in YouTube for me? I'm asking for a friend who's me. Can you go and just put some positive comments on these posts? Because I can't believe everything I post, I get negative comments from, they're probably teenage boys. I don't even know, but it's not cute. And I'm tired of it. And I'm ready to send a complaint to YouTube at this point. Because it's just crazy. I don't understand. Anyways, that's it. I got to roll this tape. I love all of you. I'm so happy you tune in week after week. Please continue to do so. And please continue to reach out because I want to tell all the stories. We deserve a voice out there. So let's do this, y'all. Thank you so much. I'm going to ask Helen Beulah, my fake assistants, to tell Nicole, who's my real assistant, who actually does things for me, not like Helen and Beulah, who just sit around smoking cigarettes and drinking whiskey all the time, to please, please tell Nicole to roll that tape. Thank you, Nicole and Helen and Beulah. If I don't say thank you to them, they like make my life miserable. It's not fun. Oh my God. Okay. Roll that tape, please. Thank you.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Aurelio and Eddie.
Hi.
Hello.
Welcome to the Queer Family Podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
We're just going to jump right in, fellas. How do we feel about this?
A bit nervous.
It's fine.
We're ready.
Don't be nervous. Ready. You're going to get 30 seconds and I will never cut you off. Everybody knows it. You're just going to keep going, but it's very fun, and I can't wait to hear your description of who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. On your marks, get set, go.
Okay, I'm Eddie.
And I'm Aurelio.
And we are Fortunate Dads. And the reason why we're Fortunate Dads is in 2020, we were lucky enough to start our family by adopting two boys, Andre and Ricardo. It was quite a journey.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to share our journey about our adoption process to make sure people understand what that's like, especially if it differs across the world, because it does, and provider to provider, and also where it started in terms of lockdown.
Boom. That was beautiful. That was beautifully said, beautifully done. You encapsulated exactly what we're going to talk about so beautifully. So well done. All right, let's dig in. Can we talk about Aurelio and Eddie and where it all began?
We've been together for 13 years now.
Congrats.
And, thank you. I know
it's a long time.
A very long time. I know. We did the traveling, the exploring. We then bought a house together. And we just thought, we've always wanted to be a family. Yeah. And it was just the right time. We did a lot of research. We looked into surrogacy. And we felt adoption was the route for us.
Before we get into the adoption, I want to talk about, I kind of want to like dig into your ideas of being parents from the beginning, you know, like, so take me back. Like, did you always want to be a parent or did that come later? How did that come about? Because that's always a huge topic with us LGBTQIA plus folks. It's something that we have to hash out and figure out once we realize that we might need help.
I mean, I've always wanted to be a parent. I've got quite a big family. I've got an identical twin brother and a sister who is 5 years older. Mm-hmm. My sister has two children, so it was nice to see them grow up, even though they lived in Dubai at the time, so we didn't see them as much as we wanted to. Mm-hmm. But we used to have lots of family parties growing up, and that was always a staple in terms of birthdays and New Year's parties, so I wanted to be a part of that.
For me, it was completely different. I'm an only child. So for me, naturally wanted a big family. I'd craved it. So for me, it was something we discussed fairly early on in our relationship. And we were both in agreement that we did want a family at some point.
And then it was deciding how many, because, you know, a lot of our friends have one or two or more. Right. So we learned a lot about that during the journey and what would be kind of best for us.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. And then let's go into this, because you said you kind of toyed with you looked into surrogacy and decided that wasn't the best route for you. What were the reasons there?
Well, there's a financial commitment for one. We wanted to buy a house at the time. And it's expensive in London.
One of my favorite quotes from an episode I did way, way back was, it was two dads, and they said, you know, like, we had to make the decision. Were we going to have a baby or were we going to buy an apartment in New York City? Right.
Yeah.
Because that's literally, this is the kind of money we're talking. So,
yeah it's expensive. And also, I'm lucky enough to have my mum's aunt is adopted. My aunt, she has a biological son, but she also had an adopted son as well. So we were immersed with it. We knew kind of things that had happened in terms of foster care and then moving into an adoption, into having those adopted children in your family.
We didn't naturally need that, you know, it had to be from us kind of thing, biologically. When we start to research and seeing how many children were in the system, it was actually quite sad, quite ignorant into adoption and fostering before we started looking into it.
We both work in education, so we work with lots of children from a wide demographic, from looked after children in need. So we know that social context as well in terms of the jobs that we do.
What is the landscape over there on the other side of the pond, so to speak, for adoption and foster care? I know what it is like here, but
in terms of the process,
well, in terms of numbers,
in terms of what you said you were kind of ignorant to,
it's high.
Well, as we went through the process, you know, there's thousands of children, thousands and thousands, and not just an adoption that sit in the foster system for their entire life. For me, and then talking to Aurelio and exploring what we wanted to do as a family, you know, making sure that we had someone that felt loved and cared for, like my cousin, like my mum's aunt, that was key. And the more you go into the process, but here, you hear and you are exposed to the amount of children and also the severity of some of the cases. So that's where it kind of started for us.
Yeah.
But there is a big need.
So it's pretty much similar, you know, sadly. Yeah. Sadly. I was hoping it was like, you know, a lot better, but.
No, unfortunately. And, you know, it seems to have got worse as well in some respects. It's getting harder in terms of need, mental health from parents, carers, and then their children. So I think COVID hasn't helped in terms of that knock-on effect. But, yeah, that's where it started. And that's where the kind of the want came from, because there's so many children that just need to be loved and cared for. It makes you think when you get further down the road, because I'll jump about, by the way, but when we got our children and you know, I remember out of reception. So they were three and they'd done this test and they failed on this test. Well, their first attempt in learning, I call it, their first attempt in learning. And I'm sitting there going, oh my God, we've failed as parents. You know, we're really bad. And my mum was over and said, why are you crying? And I said, I feel like a failure. And you said, why are you crying? They're happy. They're healthy. They're loved and cared for. And it strikes a chord. You know, they'll be the best we can offer them and the best they want to be. I think that's the point as well. You know, we all want to be better than our parents and we want them to be better than us.
Yeah, and loved and cared for and healthy and fed. Yeah. I mean, that strikes a deep chord. It really does.
Yeah.
All right, so you decided, okay, there's all these children in the system. We're going to go down this path. And then what happens?
So in this country, you have to choose a provider. So we chose a local provider, didn't we?
You can either go through an agency. We have our local boroughs. I'm not too sure how it works there.
Like a district?
Here you can go through an agency or you can go through like a private adoption route, unless you're talking about fostering.
We looked into adoption first, but there is an option where you could foster to adopt. So you go through the fostering option and then adoption, but that wasn't the right path for us.
You have your adoption training. It's kind of like you have an extra course that you have to do if you want to foster to adopt, and that basically or more focuses on just born newborn. So that would be your chance to maybe have a baby, because it's really difficult. Well, it's not difficult, it does happen. Some of our friends have had babies, but it's harder to have a newborn or as close to newborn. So people choose to foster adopt, but there's risks in terms of that child you foster may go back to a guardianship or back to their family.
And that is always the goal of the foster system is to come back with family. So
Exactly.
Same here.
For us, it was a key focus. So we chose our borough, which is kind of like the council, probably that's the easiest way. We inquired and we had a meeting.
So we did an information session where they talk about the process and how it works. They also invite a parent and they talk about their path and their history and the process and how they found it.
He was really good, actually.
We really enjoyed. And we ended up deciding on that local authority because of that person and the social workers that were there and how enthusiastic they were in terms of what they could, you know.
Yeah. It just felt personable rather than a big organization. But then it changed slightly, but it didn't change much for us.
No.
And for us, it was great because we managed to keep the same social worker. So all through the kind of first meeting that Aurelio just talked about, all the way through, we were great. We were happy, but it didn't happen for everyone on our group. And that's the thing. When you go to that first meeting, it's quite nice to see that there's lots of different people in that room. In that initial meeting, there was two same-sex couples, both males. And then there was mixed couples from different demographics. There was an older couple that brought their eldest daughter with them. So she was 18 and they were looking to adopt someone younger to give back.
Oh, wow.
It was nice, wasn't it?
It was nice. It was.
A lot of times when I talk to folks who've adopted, especially folks who are queer, well, obviously I'm talking to everybody who's queer who adopted, but sometimes they'll say, you know, you go to that first initial meeting and all of the queer people in the room are really excited because, you know, like, this is an exciting thing. This is the decision we made. We're not mourning the fact that we can't make a biological kid. But a lot of non-queer folks are there after they've been trying for a while. And so there is some sense of, like, giving up or sadness in the room that a lot of the queer folks weren't expecting when they went, because it was, like, such an exciting thing for them to finally be on the path, right?
That's true. That's
Did you notice anything like that?
We met quite a few couples like that. Part of the process, we had to do 5 days of training at a local charity. And some of the couples there were in that position. They'd gone through IVF rounds multiple times. There were so many different couples. And like Eddie said, there were same-sex couples. It was nice to see a good mix of people.
Everyone went through, they call it a loss day, and it talks about loss. So actually, even though you feel you're going down a different pathway, it actually aligns you because everyone's experienced a loss in terms of it could be a parent or a sibling or a friend. And it was really quite an emotional workshop. There was four couples in the room with a counselor. It was the whole day and it was talking about loss and dealing with it. You had to engage in some therapeutic play. You had to make your own plasticine family and things like that. And it was really nice because you didn't feel different. You just felt exactly the same, that everyone's going through this process of, you know, this is life and loss is a part of life. It's how you deal with it. And actually for us, we walked out and said that was amazing. Was, like everyone should do this because
it was a little bit, but it was
I don't know if they do that here. Oh, they don't?
I don't know, because I've never been through this particular process.
Right.
I know they do have trainings that they have to take. It's pretty similar to what you're describing, but I don't know about a lost day. Yeah,
really beneficial. Really beneficial.
That's amazing. So you go through the process to get ready to adopt, and then where do we go?
2018 we started. So December 2018, we went to the first meeting. And then you had to fill in like loads of forms, wasn't it?
It was.
It was quite intense.
Yeah.
And then they contacted us and said, we may not be able to have you this round because we've got a high influx of same-sex couples at the moment.
Oh.
It was.
We were like, move out the way. Move out the
way. Compete with your fellow gays. Come on now. Come on. We're all family here.
Exactly. But we were lucky that, you know, we put the papers in and then obviously they got back to us and we were successful. And then
there's two main stages. The first stage was paperwork. So they start with doing a full medical. So you have to do a full medical with your doctor. You also need to do a background check, which we call DBS, which is police and
criminal activity.
Criminal. And then the training. That all encompasses stage one. Once you finish that, which takes about 3 to 4 months.
Probably. Yeah, that first part where once you've done that paperwork, it's really quite intense. They come around your house and have a look at your house first. We had a dog at the time. Unfortunately, he passed away, bless him. But they had to do a dog assessment. Yeah, we love Rupert. But they done an assessment. And then we had, like, again, therapy sessions where they would talk to us about our relationship, about things we've dealt with, how long we've been together, ex-partners.
And your families too, right?
Yes.
Like taking it all the way.
References and then from the family.
But then we had to do individual ones. They were kind of they kind of like triangulate things. So they'll revisit questions and kind of that she's just sitting there making notes and you're
typing away.
It's so nerve-wracking.
It is nerve-wracking.
We do home studies, like if you do second parent adoption and probably for regular adoption too. Like here we have to do second parent adoption just to protect our families, all of us, and they do a home study and they ask all of these invasive questions that you feel like, oh my God, don't say the wrong thing. Don't say the wrong thing.
Yeah, you do. And you feel like, oh God, I shouldn't have said that. But you just got to be true to yourself.
It is.
You know, and if you're true to yourself and the core like moral compass of why you want a family, it's intense. Like it's intrusive 3 hour,
well.
3 hour sessions. And the other side of that is getting out, you know, going to your boss and your HR and your wherever you work, and it's quite time intensive. So we need another 3 hours because we've got this meeting. I need 2 hours because I've got this meeting, and that's just the beginning. You know, it gets more intense as the process goes on.
Then what happens?
Once we finish all that, we go to panel, consists of independent people that from all different walks of life. They read your initial application and either grant you, it's either yes or no. However, you're in front of, what was it, almost 10 people, and they're just asking you questions. Same reasons. Why do you want to adopt? Why did you go with that agency?
Everything. It's quite intense because you're sitting there and you're thinking, oh my God, we've done all this, and they're asking questions. And you feel judged.
Well, yeah, they're asking you every single thing about you.
Yeah, exactly. And there's almost like a judge, but it's not a judge, but there's a chair, and then there's like a medical professional. There's normally an education professional.
It's all different.
Intense.
And it's nerve-wracking.
Okay. And then what?
so then you get approved. You go on to stage two. So we both have to have a report, and it's individual to ourselves. It's almost like a mini biography.
It's the prospective adopter report. So they build this full report that is going to kind of then travel through all the way through to your final adoption. And at the same time, on the other side, which you don't have any idea this is happening, but the children will have a report as well. So they start building a picture And then obviously they've mm-hmm. built a picture. So, you know, we're successful on stage one. And now kind of the next layer of questioning, you know, do you want one child? Do you want two? Mm. You know, don't have right. three.
Ages. quite a few.
Yeah. So that starts drilling right. down into what your family will look like.
Mm.
Because okay. then the following stage is how that moves forward. So that's quite intense because mm. they make you think about everything in terms of, you know, I'm a sibling, you're not a sibling. How does that work for you? Mm. Will it work for you? It's quite a lot to cope with. So you need time as well.
Do they ask questions about, like, would you take in a child with...
Would you be willing yeah. to take a child that has a disability? And that's a difficult one because disabilities come in all different shapes and sizes. Mm. So what does a disability look like? Especially, as you mentioned, mental health. So it's really mm-hmm. difficult.
And plus, if they're younger, you wouldn't necessarily know if there was a disability right. until mm-hmm. it was diagnosed. Mm-hmm. So even if you did say no, you know, you still could potentially encounter
totally
some sort of
children that they've adopted and they may have fetal alcohol syndrome mm. or global development delay or, you know, even Andre, you know, it's difficult. I know I'm jumping, but when you get to a point where you have to go to optician appointments and mm-hmm. he's got quite bad eyes and they said, well, what's his heritage, what's his eyes mm. you know, what's his parents' eyes like? I was like, well, I don't know. So it's yeah. those kind of things that mm. you know they yeah. start kind of teasing what will your family look like
mm.
and it's difficult because you feel a bit guilty.
Oh yeah, no, I've talked to other folks who've adopted and fostered
yeah
with these questions. It's very hard to answer these questions and also mm. it's a self-reckoning.
True, you're right, it's self-reckoning. But and the way we got through with it is, you know, we can't have a biological child. So at least right. we'll have some input, because we never know what the future holds about what our family initially looks like. And that's the offset from not having a biological child. Yeah.
So it sounds like they do a lot of due diligence. Like they cover all the bases. So you answer questions in person, you fill out questionnaires, you do all the things. Did you have to make a book?
We did.
Yeah.
And a video.
So you have to create the report with the social worker. So that's your work with them. They generally write it, but it's all your information. And then as you move down, you start on a book. But that's once you go through the next phase. So once mm. you've done the final report, that PAR, the interviews, you'll end up going to a second panel.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So yeah. And this time you either are or you haven't kind of started your journey looking for your family.
Mm-hmm.
And we were lucky enough to have that in process. So I don't know how it works in the US, but we use LinkMaker here. Mm.
It's an online platform where it has all the children's profiles. So basically, uh-huh. you are just going through a big database of children within your area. Uh-huh. And national, mm-hmm. yes. You can be quite specific on location, even down to age. There's quite a few filters on there. And then it gives you a short summary of the child or children. Because some were siblings,
yep.
some were up mm-hmm. to five siblings yep. that you could adopt.
Yeah,
I feel like in the States, the adoptive parents don't get to look themselves.
Really?
I feel like you submit your stuff, you submit your book of who mm. you are, mm. and then whoever the agency or mm. whoever it is that you're with kind of does the outreach.
That's part of the LinkMaker. So once we're on LinkMaker, that's the platform they use here, we had a profile. So we had to put mm-hmm. four or five pictures of ourselves, our dog at the time, and we had to kind of put a description about me, you,
mm.
and then what our family looks like in terms of our location. So, you know, mm-hmm. we've got a rural area where there's a local park, blah, blah, blah. So the children's social workers are looking at yours as well. So that's kind of mm-hmm. similar, but you do get to then, you know, select the children that you want to kind of have a conversation about.
However, it didn't happen in our circumstance, but however, you do get a family finder, which is a similar situation to what you were saying, where they find the prospective
yeah.
child mm-hmm. for you. So I think it depends on the agency and
your social worker.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the most heartbreaking things is when you're on this website is the children up for adoption are only good as their social worker, and we know that the social system is stretched. So some children right. have an essay about them, and you know that you can't, it's not specific, but it's, you know, they're fun, they're bubbly, they're interactive, and then some have hardly any information. So it's a really unfair system in terms of placing children on an even level playing field. Mm-hmm. That's what we saw. It was quite upsetting.
Ugh, yeah. Mm. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
All right, so Aurelio and Eddie went the adoption route, which is a great and viable path for our families. And some of us really want that genetic tie. And you know what? Every path is valid. Every path is beautiful. And so if you are one of those folks who does want a biological tie to your future child or children, I have a promo code for you, y'all. You know I do. And it's from the same cryobank I use to make my babies at. It's California Cryobank, y'all. And it's a full service sperm bank. And for over 45 years, California Cryobank has proudly helped tens of thousands of LGBTQIA plus clients create the families of their dreams, including yours truly. And they are the number one sperm bank in the US. And they ship to over 40 countries. And they have one of the largest and most diverse selection of sperm donors. So all you have to do is visit cryobank.com and you're going to use promo code QUEERFAM for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. This code can also be used for a really great discount on the level 3 subscription, which gets you even more things. So let's make those babies, y'all. Go do this. Go enter that code. Go shopping. Let's look at some sperm. I guess we're not looking at sperm, though. Let's find your donor. Let's do it. Okay, let's get back to Aurelio and Eddie.
Love is love.
And where are most of the children that are in this system?
So foster care, generally. It depends on the area as well. It might be that if there was a local birth parent that had an issue in the local area, it probably would mean that that child would be placed out of area if in case there was any, you know, issues around being adopted locally. Mm. But they're all over the UK. So you'll see as you scroll through Wales or Northampton or London or Essex or wherever, and you get notifications in your email. There's a new match potentially added, you know, so you can sign in and have a look.
It's quite intense at the time.
Yeah.
And overwhelming as well, because when you're going through profile after profile and you're thinking, it's almost a rejection each time. It's quite draining.
It is emotional draining.
So you were matched numerous times?
We looked at a few matches. We kind of followed it up with our social worker. Like I said, our social worker was really brilliant. Mm. So kept on making contact until we got into conversations about what do we really want. So we kind of like focused in on two siblings. Mm. I'm a twin. Aurelio's got Portuguese heritage. I remember it. I was at work and it was break time. So I wasn't working, but it was break time.
Because you work all the time. I mean,
right. Yes. So I remember this notification coming through. So I logged on and you were at work as well. Mm. And I said, oh my God, I think we've just found our children. I said, log on. And you logged on and you said the same, right?
Yeah, it was twin boys with a Portuguese heritage. It wasn't something we were looking for. We weren't looking for twins. We weren't looking for a Portuguese heritage.
You know, when it clicks and you just think, I'm a twin, you're Portuguese. This is like a match made in heaven. This is it.
To the point that we stopped, we deactivated our profile and put all our effort into the two boys.
Yeah.
You're like, these are our babies. This is it. So what do you have to do?
At that point, you just press a button and you say, we're interested. And then I thought it was going to be quicker, but it's not. And then it's a waiting game. And
the social workers have to talk to each other. So the boy's social worker would have to communicate with our social worker. They exchange the pass. They read through it, see if there's a potential match there. At the time, there was another couple going through the process. So,
well, basically, they said it might not happen because we're already talking to this other family. So at that point, because it is emotional, we just said, let's just wait because these are ours. And if it isn't, we just need a bit of a break. And we learned that on Lost Day because it's emotional and you're connecting with, children. Yeah. Mm. So we said, no, let's just hold off. You know, we believe that these are our children. And we did, didn't we? We just
waited.
And then I think it was 2-3 weeks later, there was a phone call and said, the social worker for the boys would like to come and meet you, do a house visit and see if, you know, there's a potential match. Mm. And we were like, what? We were like, yeah. When? Tomorrow?
God, this is so nerve-wracking. Just thinking about it.
It was.
Oh, God.
It's, yeah.
So they come.
Yeah. And we said, like, what do we put on a spread? Do we do a buffet? Do they like schlur or do we sensei? We had some sensei on. I said, do we pour some wine? I don't know what we do. So we don't know what to do. Because you feel like, again, someone's coming into your house to go, dirty.
Yeah.
But you do. And you think, oh my God, this is it. This is our chance to make it.
Highest stakes ever right here.
Yeah.
Highest stakes.
Tidy up. Put the child locks on, but you don't. You just go, this is our house, right? So they came over, didn't they? And she was lovely. Yeah,
she was amazing.
She was so good, wasn't she? And then she asked us some questions. She asked us kind of similar questions, but more focusing on the boys and why. Mm. And we talked about what I said in terms of being a twin, Portuguese heritage. Aurelio's mum and dad speak Portuguese, so that would be a great way of keeping their, you know, mother tongue.
Yeah. It was more casual. We were thinking it was going to be more of a formal setting, lots of questions, and it was just a chat. It was just to get to know us, to see our personalities and the setting, where the potential home.
See their bedroom, where it would be, kind of things like that. Before she left, she said, you know, this could be this. Yeah. Then you get your hopes up because you go, this could be a match. And we were like, so don't know what to say. So she left and our social worker remained. And we said, what does that mean? She went, well, I've got to go back and blah, blah, blah. And we're like, oh, God. And it came about that the other family weren't quite what they were looking for. And we were like, so what you're saying is... It's a yes. And she said, oh, I've got to get back to you. And then we got a phone call saying, we think it's a match. We're moving forward. It was the best feeling ever. Absolutely the best feeling ever.
Because it took you like 3 years, no?
They don't really do much around Christmas, Easter when it comes to adopting because placements slow down because it's the holidays and things like that. Mm-hmm. So then we restarted in January. And then from January, it was around about, 15 months, just less because we... Eventually, the boys came to live with us just before COVID. So it took from January all that time. I know.
Oh my God.
All that training out the bag.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's COVID and we're stuck in the house.
Yes.
Oh my God. Great time to get to know each other.
It was. Because, like January through to the December, because we thought we'd probably get the boys slightly quicker. But again, they slowed down for Christmas again. So we knew everything was ready. Around about October, but obviously they're in foster care and, you know, moving in during a holiday season is quite difficult. So then we knew roughly it was going to happen sometime in January.
Yeah.
So we just had to kind of just wait. But it gave us a bit of time, actually. It gave us time to decorate the room, even though our social work, you know, it's not set in stone yet because there's a third panel you need to go to.
Oh, my gosh. This is too nerve-wracking. Were the boys together?
They were.
They were in a foster together.
The foster parent.
She was great.
She was.
She was really, really good. You know, we didn't meet her until we met the boys at the third panel.
Mm.
So she was there. And we'd done a pre-meeting with her in January at the boys' house, but the boys weren't there. And it differs depending on your adoption here. If it's a younger child, you might have what they call bump-ins.
Oh, yes.
In the park.
So basically, if they're younger, then you would meet up in a park and go, nice
to see you.
I haven't seen you for a while, and slowly introduce you to the child that way.
Like an acquaintance or an old friend.
Yeah. But generally, younger children that are babies, really. So pre 2 years.
Mm.
But our boys were around about two.
Mm.
So we brought them home around about when they were 2.5. So they knew what they were looking at, so they were kind of engaged with numbers and games.
Mm.
So we had to make a book of ourselves, and we had to make a video, which is the most cringiest thing I've ever done in my life. But Rio's good at it, so not the cringe.
It
could be a bit cringe. We laugh at it, but we had to make a book. We had to make a video that then the foster care would play to the boys. But that was post panel. Sorry, the panel three was the other really nerve wracking thing.
It was.
Because we had to take something that the boys would remember us by. So we had to build into the book, had to build into the video, because then they'd show videos and pictures and stuff. It was really nerve-wracking because it was more about, are you ready? You know, what if the boys are this or this or this? Like, loads of hypothetical things.
And it was also the final yes or no. It was the final stage. It was the final, will they finally be placed with us or not? That is it.
Yeah.
So emotional. It was...
I cry at anything anyway.
It was intense.
It was so intense. But the main chair, she was lovely. She was amazing. Really good. There was, again, a panel of probably 12 because we had a couple of observers.
Yes.
So, again, it's really intense. You're in a courthouse or town hall. And then you're kind of like, oh, what's going to happen? And they say it there. They say it there. They say, you know, we're going to approve you. And then we got whisked away into this room and you start planning the next stage, which is more intense because you're worried about everything. It's because then you're worried about your work and kind of making it fit because you work on a transition program. So that's really difficult.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. So you know the boys. You know who they are. You're like anticipating them coming. You're hoping. It's so nerve-wracking. And the boys, have they been in the foster care system their whole lives? Like,
we were lucky that the boys, when they got removed from their birth family, that they only had one foster parent.
Oh, okay.
And she was great. She also spoke, she was Portuguese, so she spoke Portuguese. So again, immersing them in their mother tongue. She had another child living with her at the time. She had a husband, a daughter. The daughter just had a child. So it was a really lovely, lovely, lovely environment. And she was so good at setting down.
She was.
Like the boundaries, things like, you know, they've gone to bed at this time, they don't get up until this time. It's hard because once you go through that planning, you are having to go into the the foster carer's home. And that's awkward in itself because it's not your home. But she was so good about teaching us about the boys, wasn't she?
She was.
She was just phenomenal.
How long had she had them?
About a year and a half. A year and a bit.
So they were
14 months.
They were 16 babies.
Months.
They were.
They were babies when they came to her. So they probably have no recollection of their birth families.
No. I mean, when they were at school about 6 months ago, they were talking about they do sex education at low level. And they said, everyone was born, but we were in our foster carer's belly for 2.5 years. Well, we said, no, no, you weren't. But for them, that's all they knew.
Yeah.
But there's lots of layers behind that because, you know, you're in a class with children that have been naturally conceived with both parents and they don't know their story yet. And it's their story to tell. No one else's story to tell. It's their story to tell. And it's really difficult. So that later stage when you're dealing with educationists and things in classrooms and their history is difficult. But they know they're adopted because we're a same-sex couple. You know, they use the word adopted,
I mean, that's the thing with our families. You know, we tell our kids their origin stories from the start because we really have to, right? There's no getting around it. It has to be explained to them.
Yeah, exactly.
And so they're really like, our kids are really in the know compared to some kids who haven't ever thought about how I was created. Like, why would they think about that, right?
Yeah, but that's true.
We talk about it a lot. So that's one of the things that makes us unique and super intentional and badass and amazing, in my opinion.
It's true.
So then they finally say, like, take me to the moment. Like, they're like, okay, they're coming. And then the moment they come. And then, like, I just want to feel the feeling. I want to feel it.
Well, there's no feeling like it. Until you've been through the process, there is no feeling like it because you just feel whole. You just feel whole and you've got so much anxiety, but you're, I mean, this is it. You're so focused and you're so engaged and everything is to do with the boys that we didn't even notice the outside world changing in terms of COVID. You know, literally we didn't at all because we were leaving here and we were traveling for around about an hour and a half.
So that's the intros.
Yeah.
So once you finish that process, you go into introductions for 2 weeks. That involves slowly integrating yourselves into their lives. So you'd go for a morning session and stay for breakfast and then go. and then stay for half the day and see what they do up to lunch and then go. And you slowly build up to be there for the whole day.
Yeah.
It's over 2 weeks.
The first week is then.
And then ending where they come to you. But like Eddie was saying, this was when COVID was starting.
Creeping up. But we didn't realize it. So we'd leave here at 6, maybe 5:30 in the morning, travel for about an hour and a half, and then spend the time there and then travel back. So then it's those conversations with work. You know, are you going to be in today? No.
So much time.
It's so stressful. Our bosses were great. Yeah. I will say my head teacher at the time was absolutely phenomenal, because you don't know until you map out your plan of what that 2 weeks look like, depending on the children. You just don't know what it looks like. So it's really difficult to ring up and go, you know, I thought I was going to be back tomorrow. I'm not.
Right,
because you've also got adoption leave coming up. So you know that, Aurelio was the primary carer, so we knew we'd taken him into account in terms of he'd be at home. But I only had 2 weeks adoption leave, like you would have paternity leave. So that was already planned. So it's difficult. But that 2 weeks is intense. Then you bring them. So the first week at theirs, and then the second week was at ours. And you do things like the same thing, routine, breakfast, changing, if they need changing. And then, did they sleep over?
One
night they slept over. But it's that little thing about connection. So at the same time when you're doing that, you're bringing bits with you from their home, you know, like a comfort blanket or their favorite teddy bear or their favorite toy.
Things they're familiar with.
It's that kind of added thing that you've got to think about, because at the same time you're moving everything they own to your house at the same time. And that takes a lot of thinking and planning, you know, even down to, you know, we're using their car seats. We had to go and buy new car seats because there's a time where we're taking them and the foster carer doesn't have them anymore.
Right. You need double.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you need double. It's quite a logistical nightmare, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then also you're hoping that the kids are going to adjust well, and it's going to go well. And sounds like it went pretty well.
Yeah, but it does. And you just have to think about, you go back to training, and our social worker was brilliant. It's kind of, you've got to make mistakes as well in front of the children, because you've got to say exactly what you just said. You're setting new rules, our house, not ours, but ours as a family. So do we leave that door open, or do we wear trainers or shoes in the house, or where do we put the table?
And reuse your bath towel, or do you get a new one each time? Like little tiny things that you don't think about. With like,
do you leave your bedroom door open of a night now, or do you shut it, or does the light need to be off, or do they need a night light? And then safeguarding the house and things like that. So it's all those things about, you know, that preparation, and your support network's good. I mean, you're not meant to introduce your family, so it's still hard because you're living this emotional roller coaster as a family, but you're not allowed to engage with nanny or auntie or brothers, or because it's a lot of faces for children. So it's still baby steps. So you're trying to share your story, but we're talking, but you can't really put it across to anyone because it's so different and alien to them. That's why social media is so good, because you can reach out and ask people for, you know, what did you do when they said no, or, you know, they were crying for 3 hours on the stair or something. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, you're kind of on your own. So you go through the visits, you go through all that, and then they finally move in.
The 4th of March, 2020, they officially move in. They officially move in.
Right. At the beginning, like you are about to lock down.
So the day before he was meant to finish his leave, you went in for one day to do a return to work meeting, and they went, "We're closing."
I went, "What?" I said, "What's the matter?" She went, "You need to get in there and do some photocopy." And I said, "Why? What's going on?" They went, "The school is shutting on Monday." I went, "What do you mean it's shutting? What for?" And they went, "Where have you been?" I went, "We've got two children."
We just got two brand new kids just chilling.
Because that first 2 weeks you're just immersed, that paternity is so quick. So you just got required, and you're tired,
exhausted.
Everything's new.
And they're two.
Yeah.
They were two at the time.
Yeah, two and a half.
That's a hard age in general, right?
Terrible twos.
Oof. I mean, I think every age has its own terrible aspect.
I'll say that.
Yeah. and you're trying to adjust and you're trying to get the kids to adjust, and they're two and a half, right? So, Okay, yeah. So then COVID happens, and then you, in a nutshell, what was that like for you? You know, you have these two new human beings living with you.
It was nice because we obviously, it's almost a double-edged sword where you had the opportunity to bond and spend quality time with each other, but then you also didn't get the support. Did I deal with that situation correctly? Things in general, am I doing that correctly? What do I do next? How do I handle this? And just having that support network of, yeah, you're fine, or just having the support of saying, no, you're doing a good job.
I mean, right.
It's something we didn't have.
Yeah. I mean, we both take our hat off to any single adopters during that time. Because, oh my God, it must have been the hardest thing you've ever done in your life.
Mm.
Because it was hard for us. Because even though school was shut, I had to go in for a week and then I'd be off for 2 weeks, then in for a week. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'd come home and I'd just have to say, right, you've got to go. You've got just not go, but go upstairs, chill out, read a book, have a bath, whatever, because it's intense. Well, you've done the same for me.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
But it's really difficult because all the training that put in place was, oh, you've got a support network, or there's, you know, new family groups, or there's this, or the local park is great because the kids can run around.
Right.
No. Like nothing. You're not allowed to meet nanny, not allowed to meet granddad. It was so, so hard.
And emotional for our family as well, because obviously the grandparents want to meet, you know, Andre and Ricardo, but they can't. Yeah. And we were doing doorstep teas and coffees where, you know,
end of the drive. They were sat at the end of the drive, so 10 meters away, trying to, you know, introduce them to their grandchildren.
Oh, my God.
Really difficult. But I will say, at the same time, it was just phenomenal because it just made us bond as a family. Mm. We grew stronger.
We did.
You know what I thought was best is that, you know, as a parent, I go, ask your dad or ask daddy. you didn't get to that stage because we were so engrossed in it. It was almost like I'd finish your sentence and vice versa because we had so much time to talk about it. It was the only thing you could talk about.
Mm.
So for us, it was great. And then the weather was brilliant that year. It was in England. It was gorgeous. So all the way through March, all the way through to summer, so we could have that outdoor space. They were being potty trained, so it was okay, run free in the garden. So for us it was brilliant. Again, if you're in a one bedroom or a flat or an apartment, it must have been just so much harder. So we were so grateful for where we were in terms of the house we'd bought before we adopted to make sure that, I mean, you can't preempt that thing, you can't preempt COVID. But for us, we'd made the right decisions, that it was just perfect for the start.
I'm so happy for you. Like, I could cry. And how's it going now? How old are they? What do they do? What are they up to? What's going on? How's it going?
At the moment, they're on tablets over there. They've been at, we've got holiday at the moment, so they had holiday club today. So their faces are painted as Spider-Man. That's the hero at the moment.
And how old are they?
They're six. They'll be seven next July. They're just phenomenal. They're so good. I mean, I know they're ours, and we they will get in trouble at times, and they will be naughty at times. But everyone we come across say they're the most adorable, but best behaved. That I will say that groundwork came from their foster carer, and we've just all the tips that she gave us, we just kept with, and the routines, we kept with the routine. So their bedtime is generally their bedtime, because they've always done that. So for us, you know, we owe loads to their foster carer.
So what do you use your social media for, just for folks to go follow you?
It started during lockdown, and it was to connect with other same-sex parents or adoptive parents. But then it's just grown, and now we feel that we want to give back. So now I'm constantly following new adoptive parents, and I'm always saying, if you have any questions, just ask. And we've kept all our documents and videos, and we do occasionally get people ask, oh, how did you do this, or how did you fill in this form, and we always send them the information. So it's good to give back. I also think it's important for the boys to see other same-sex couples, you know, see it's normal. Where we live, I don't think there is many, so we do reach out, and we've got good connections with other families, which we see that's on amazing. A regular basis. So that's also nice to have.
Yeah, it's really important. It's really important to have a network that they see it's their life out there as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the same as other people, as the next person, the next person.
Because representation really does matter. Mm. And you're creating a wonderful well of representation for your kids, which is like beautiful and amazing. Mm. Like, you're doing the good work. I just love it.
The kids don't see black, white. They don't see. I mean, like, we were on holiday last year and some child came up to Andre and went, "Where's your mum?" He went, "What are you on about? I don't have a mum. I have a dad and daddy."
They're over there.
They're there. But it's that normalization that they are able to express themselves. I'm quite open in my job that I talk about me being a gay man with my partner and my two children that we've adopted. I use them in almost every assembly because it's a connection. You know, if there's a story and you can follow a story and you can connect with that story, you're more likely to, you know, remember the story, but also act on the story because it's real. So that's what we like to do.
And it's a safe space, and normalization matters, right? So, right. And you create a safe space for anybody who's in the room hearing that story, who identifies in any way with some part of your story. Exactly. So it's all beautiful. And us showing up as our true authentic selves is so important for the rest of the world. You know,
unbelievable. Yeah, true. It's true.
Yeah, I firmly believe so. And I just absolutely adore you two. And I adore your family. And I adore what you're doing, and I just want to lift you up. So thank you for everything you do.
Thank you so much.
I love it.
It's lovely to connect as well in terms of have platforms like this, because one thing I do felt that we struggled with is finding that information. So, you know, your podcast is inspirational in terms that there's people can listen and you can start even not finding the facts or just starting a conversation because we couldn't find.
Not talked about.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And if it is talked about, if the adoption we were just talked about, it's talked about from a heteronormative lens for the most part, you know. Our perspectives are a little bit different. We are a little, our stories are different. Our paths are different. They're the same. It also has its own unique differences, right? Yeah. And so it's important to hear stories from our lenses, just to hear those little tiny nuances that some big nuances that happen, you know, in our stories, in our journeys. And there are no guidebooks.
It's where we become a family. It's what do we call ourselves? Little things
exactly.
Like that.
That took a while.
Yeah. What do you call yourselves?
Dad, daddy. So we settled quite. It took about 3 weeks, but it's those things you don't think about. Well, you know what?
Yeah, we have to make every single decision too. It took you three weeks to come up with those. Yeah. You know what I mean? No, seriously, because I think we both wanted to be mommy and, you know, one of us had to bend, right? Yeah, and so, and I love who I'm mama, she's mommy. And basically it's just mom now anyway. mom, basically you're just yelled at as mom, no matter what. But yeah, like every little thing in our families really does have to be decided.
Yeah,
it's not just, we don't fit the norm. So we have to create what our norm is, and that's the beauty, and that's also part of the difficulties in our journeys, and that's why accounts like yours, resources like this podcast, all of this stuff is really important, like you said, to get the conversation going, to get the thoughts going.
100%.
Oh my God. Well, if I'm ever over there, I'm going to come visit you.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, you have to. Have you been to London before?
I've been to London once, and I was only there for, I think, 3 or 4 days.
Wow.
So I am due a visit to London.
Okay.
So
you'll have to pay us a visit.
Yeah, I will. I really will. Watch out. Show up on your door with my kids. <and my wife. laughs>
We have a spare room. That's fine. Don't worry.
Perfect. Okay, we're coming. This has really just been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited to share this with the listeners. It's going to be a great episode.
Thank you so much for listening to our story. Really appreciate it.
Oh my God, anytime. And I'll be following you on the socials. So
thank you.
Oh my goodness.
Queer Family Podcast.
A special thanks once again to our sponsor, California Cryobank. Don't forget, y'all, use that code QUEERFAM, QUEERFAM, for a free level 2 subscription to their donor catalog. Go make those babies, y'all, and then come tell me about it. Go make them. Go ahead.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.